So let's go back to your brief first period with Gloucester in 1956. You played for the United at Bream, is that right?
Yes, I think it was. Yes, I remember that. Yes, we did. We had a good win at Bream, I think it was. But I don't know, I might be wrong, but I'm almost certain that the local vicar was on the committee. He either ran the touch or he was a hard-working committee man down at Bream. But we won that one quite easily. It was the first time I think I'd ever been into the forest, or one of the first times. And it's another world, in a way. I think we played at Cheltenham United. I think we went down occasionally to play Berry Hill, and that was quite an initiation to go down there. They've always been strong in the forest. Just after the First World War, I'm almost certain they used to have the old players like Bumps Carpenter Senior, and came up from Cinderford, and they were a good nursery.
You were played alongside Bumps Carpenter Junior, both for Cheltenham and for the county.
And I played with Bumps at Cheltenham.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never played with him in the county.
Oh, right. He did play for the county.
Oh, very much
times.
So. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you probably propped with him.
No, not in the county.
Mm-hmm.
The hooker that I played in my first county in '54 was Cyril Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
I said, and then after that, when I came back in '59, when Bumps had retired, then it was John Thorne, and I did play in a friendly game at Lydney, one of my last games, and John Pullin. It was his first game for Gloucestershire, a friendly game against Lydney, but that was many years later. No, I didn't play with Bumps in the county, and of course his brother played for the county, and his father very certainly played for the county. They were a very strong rugby family, the Carpenters.
Mm. Yeah, and Bumps was a hooker like his father, wasn't he?
Yes, he was, yeah. Yes. And he was... he was an outstanding hooker. He was one almost like Cyril Thomas. All they concentrated on their psyche, sort of, they had to get the ball, whichever way they got the ball, they could swing for the ball, and sometimes their feet would almost go outside of the scrum. And if they had a strong prop forward, they'd allow them to swing. If you get down, it was dangerous, but they did. And I believe that. That's what I'm almost certain when I think he played with Tom Price a little bit, and Tom Price could drop down on Jordan, hold him with one arm, and Bumps could swing out. They had to get the ball. If they didn't get the ball, and they daren't lose the ball on their own head, they weren't quite so mobile as they are nowadays, but they were very good at their specialist hookers. That was Bumps and Cyril Thomas. They were excellent hookers, both of them.
After that game down at Bream, you were then selected for your first game for the Gloucester first team.
Yes,
which,
I played against
Bucharest, wasn't it?
Yes, it was Bucharest, and then after that, I was dropped to the thing. And I was quite happy in the United, but then I was getting a little bit of pestering from Cheltenham. come back. And I went back.
Can you tell us about the Bucharest game? What memories do you have of that?
Well, I think we did quite well. There was a mistake by either the fullback or the outside half, I think. I can't blame it on to it, but anyway, there was a mistake, and they just beat us 6-3, which was a bit of a disappointment. But I can't remember a great deal. It's so long ago now, 1956. In the front row, we just kept our heads down and did the best we could. But...
And had a celebratory dinner in the evening.
Yes, it was done properly.
At the New Inn.
Yes, it was done very, very well indeed. Disappointed not to have won it, I suppose, at the time, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah. Right, shall we move on then to your return to Gloucester when the bank posted you back over to Gloucester?
Yeah, the bank posted me back over in 59, and... As usual, the trials had a lot of very good players, but what went my way to a certain extent, and it also, I have a feeling from memory, it went the same way for Roy Folk. I played in my first season, I think it was, with the Folk brothers, Jack Folk, and Roy for Cyril Thomas to start with, and Jack and Roy were two good solid forwards, but they'd been to Stroud. Although they were Gloucester boys, they'd been to Stroud, and they came back that season. And when I was dropped the first year, when I came back, I think Roy was the elder brother was a prop, and he was a good prop, old Roy. In some spheres, he would have got an England cap quite easily, but we weren't quite a fashionable club in those days. But Roy, and then Jack was a hooker, and then he converted to a prop, and he became a good solid prop for many years for Gloucester, and that was the front row. Peter Ford was captain.
It might help jog your memory, Alan, if I put in front of you the listings we have here from the honours boards in the Lions Den for the players who went on the honours boards in those years, because that'll bring back memories to you.
Yes, and in those days it was so regimentally done and done in a fair way. You had to play so many games to be on the honours board anyway, and then your names were put on the honours board in the list of the games you played. So if you played the most games, you were at the top of the list. And undoubtedly Peter Ford had that year, and it went right down, and I was in the middle of the table, so I played probably half the season. And
that's interesting, because they varied that over the years. There was a period when they did it in order of seniority, how many years you've been
playing.
That's
quite correct, actually, because when I was captain, I wasn't at the top of the board, I would admit, no. I was second on the board, because I hadn't played more games than Alan Holder. Because I was in the county that year, so I was out for about four games, and Alan quite rightly so had played more games than me, so he was top of the board. But then what happened? They decided to update all the boards, which had been in the old social club, and when they regulated them, I don't know in their wisdom, well not their wisdom, they decided that the top name should at least be the captain. So I was promoted back on the present board, back to the top of the board. But they were very regimental in the way they did it, because usually you had about 18 on the honours board and on the photograph, the 15, and you didn't have replacements in those days, but you had the three, and I think the committee said, oh, just go down to the 18, and they went religiously down to the 18. If you'd played enough games, you were on the 18. If you hadn't played enough games, irrespective of where you played in the rest of the season, you weren't on the board. So it did work. I mean, they couldn't do it nowadays with all these squads as they are now. It's the days are gone when you can have boards like this. But I always used to feel very proud when anybody ever talked about Gloucester. I could always say, well, we've got a photograph for every year since the club was founded. We've got an honours board for every year since the club was founded. And I don't think any other club in the country had that. And nothing's been wasted. The boards are still there. In the shed bar, the photographs are all still there, and the excellent work which your project have done in the last two or three years has brought it all up to date. So that's one beauty of Gloucester. The tradition and the history is there.
Yeah.
Some clubs, unfortunately, have let it slip away. Not all the clubs, but some clubs, and if they haven't caught it in time. But with Gloucester, I think with your project, and the hard work you've put into it, it's really brought it up to date, and it's a worthwhile exercise, because as every year goes by, professional rugby now has been in 15 years, and another 15 years they look back and they say, well, what was that? But your website and your history, you'll be able to look back on it. So I think it's great.
Well, I think you've had some feedback on that, haven't you, from visiting committees?
Because they're confronted with our history now, aren't they, in the new stadium. It is excellent.
So, give us some of your memories of those players that you were playing alongside in from 59 onwards. Who would you pick out of their...
Out of the players on the honours board that year... And there were 19. 14 of them were born and bred in Gloucester. There were two from Cheltenham, myself and a wing three-quarter called Tony Osman. We were both Cheltenham Grammar School boys, so we were the intake from Cheltenham, where we would come from Cheltenham. There were two from Stroud, which was Russell Hiller, who's now the rep on the RFU and has been for about the last 8 years, an outstanding sort of individual, Russell. Russell Hiller and Baggy Hudson, they were two ex-Marling Grammar School boys, so they'd been brought up in rugby, Marling Grammar School, but they were in the honours board and in the team. And there was one from Hereford, which was Alan Brin. But so that's how it used to work in those days. There was 14 Gloucester and about five outsiders, and we were all within 8 miles, or not far outside Gloucester anyway. But it was amazing how a city like Gloucester would produce a team from virtually all local combinations players, and they were all good players. And in that year that I was there, I was captain in 61. There was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them became captains of Gloucester afterwards. So it, once again, it showed the strength in the local community to produce players like that. And they went on. There was Mickey Booth, Alan Holder, Dick Smith, John Bayliss, Mike Nichols a little later in 63, Mike, and Gary White 62. But they'd all come around that era to produce all those captains. It was amazing.
Can we go through those one at a time, Alan? And, you know, you just say what memories you have of them. You know, what sort of players were they? What sort of characters were they?
Well, Mike Nichols was an outstanding captain. I didn't play under him when he was captain, but I can understand how he developed into the type he was. He's a doer sort of player, no-nonsense, grafted, led from the front, but he was outstanding. And he, along with Peter Ford, were two of the outstanding captains that Gloucester had. Peter, for the fact that he, in the 50s, he'd been the stalwart captain. Then Mike Nichols took over in the 70s when... And there again, they're looking at another one, there's Mickey Booth. They're all stalwart captains that you couldn't know. And Alan Holder was a fullback. Although he was centre. The year I was captain, I thought, well, it was the duty of the captain in those days to elect their own vice captain. So I looked through the team and I thought, well, I'd like Alan Holder. So he was living at that time over his family's butcher shop in Westcott Street, the Teague family. And I went down and I tapped on the door and said, will you become a vice captain? And he said, yes. And Alan was playing in the centre, I think, mainly that time, because we had Russell Hiller, who came from Stroud, and he was the fullback. So Alan was the centre. So he was my vice captain, but he captained the club later on, 2 or 3 years later. Dick Smith, of course, was another. They were all very good captains, but Dick was a local Old Crypton, father of Ian, of course, another captain. And then John Bayliss, I think he originated Gordon Lee, but he was a hard, rough, tough centre. Whenever you go away now, they always remember Bayliss. You know, they in a complimentary way. They're not upset by him, but they always remember that he
remember the bruises.
Yeah, the bruises. Yes, very much so. In this day and age, half the problems are the fact they're so fit and so big and that, and they have such horrible knocks. And when you think that I was about 15 and a half stone when I was prop forward, they're now 19 stone. And when they hit one another, they hit another so hard.
Mm-hmm.
But John Bayliss used to go in hard in those days. And I think subsequently, I think he had to damage his neck through it. And I think he got over it. But nowadays, you can understand how they only last about 10 years because it's just their bodies just can't take it.
Yeah.
In our days, we played hard, mind. We played as hard as we could, but we weren't quite that big, and we weren't really tuned like thoroughbred horses. We were just rugby players playing a hard game.
Yeah.
The story is that when John Bayliss broke his neck, I understand he went into casualty and he was seen there, and then he was actually sent home.
Was
he? And went home by car and only went back into hospital 3 days later.
Monitor all this, the medical attention to players, which is needed. In those days, a lot of it was glossed over. You either had just a wet sponge on the pitch, and afterwards, oh well, so and so. Occasionally, if it was that bad, if it was broken, you'd have to go to the hospital. But usually, you seemed to play through it, and within a couple of weeks, you were back. But here again, it's understandable. They're so well tuned up nowadays that...
Mind you, I must admit, a couple of weeks ago when I met John Bayliss, I was mighty impressed how, 50 years on from his playing days, and he's still got a huge barrel chest and very big shoulders.
Oh, yeah.
It was an unusual physique for a centre.
Yeah. He put a lot into rugby over the years. He was president of Gordon League until a few years ago, and it's one thing with Gloucester. That's the beauty of this association. It's just started off, but it's going very well, and over the years I'm almost certain it will expand, because there's a good camaraderie amongst the players. When you meet them, they don't change from 30, 40 years ago. They're so much the same, their personalities and their characters. And I think they've all loved have played for Gloucester.
I was just going to say, what comes across is their fondness of the club.
Yeah, well,
and wanting still to be associated in some way.
In my rugby, it was certainly the highlight to have been captain of Gloucester.